This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. This is the Rich Eisen Show from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Fernando Mendoza, the only social media site that he's on is LinkedIn. He basically told the Raiders, you're on the clock for me.
Today's guests, Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, host of Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, broadcasting legend Bob Costas. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. We are live on Disney Plus. We are live on the ESPN app, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. Hello to everybody that is out there taking us in. 844-204-RICH being that number to dial. Please to have a conversation with us. So much to discuss as the coaching carousel is spinning. Some pieces are landing. We've got Championship Sunday, press conference day on this Wednesday. Everybody stepping to a podium to talk about the upcoming games for the right to play in Super Bowl 60 in both conferences. Whoever's talking and they say something compelling, we'll turn it around and play it for you. In between three guests, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk right in the middle, and two Hall of Famers around him. That's Kurt Warner first up in about 18 minutes time, and Bob Costas in hour number three. Bob will be joining us to talk about the new members of Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, and its voters announcing Carlos Beltran and Andrew Jones have garnered enough to be so enshrined. And it's the latest that makes you maybe scratch your head or you're saying it's the right stuff. And Bob also apparently has an axe to grind about NFL overtime. Oh, okay. So I would stay tuned for that in hour number three. You also have the floor, as I mentioned, at 844-204-RICH being that number to dial. Good to see you, Christopher Brockman. How are you?
Hey, Rich. Good morning, my friend.
DJ Mikey D is in his nuts. Mike Del Tufo in his chair. TJ Jefferson, good to see you over there, sir.
Well, speaking of Bob, I want to welcome Lou Bob to the family of the New York.
You want to explain what that hieroglyphics, verbal hieroglyphics, actually means? What does that mean?
Luis Roberts.
Luis Roberts traded to the Mets.
Okay, isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
At least his team's doing something.
Is that right?
Trying.
Making moves.
Ours aren't doing.
Making moves. We'll talk, obviously, about free agency and who's signed and who's not and the Dodgers owning half the planet.
Go Dodgers. We're all playing for second, really.
Speaking of, if you're like me, your timelines, plural, today have just been completely clogged with reactions to a New York billionaire speaking to the public and everybody wondering, what's he saying? From Switzerland all the way to Buffalo, New York, basically. Let's stay in the sports lane for a moment.
As your attorney, I advise that.
Okay.
As your comedy consultant, I got you.
I know.
You're rolling with it.
I'm fine.
I have no opinion.
I think I made my point. Terry Pegula, the owner of the Buffalo Bills, very, very rich man, and his new president of football operations and general manager, Brandon Bean, met with the media today, just a couple days after surprising many by bouncing their highly successful, after 9 years, head coach in Sean McDermott. And in the same way that Steve Bisciotti held a press conference and you're like, I didn't know Steve had pretty much had enough of John Harbaugh as much as he was not letting on prior to letting John Harbaugh go. But boy, John was pretty much toast there, even though Bisciotti was very emotional about parting ways with him. And you know, him basically saying, hey, if the kick had gone through the uprights, would he have been the head coach there still for one more week, says Bisciotti. Mm-hmm. And in this way, like, hey, if you had beaten the Denver Broncos, would you still be the head coach there, Sean McDermott? And the answer obviously is yes, he'd be ready for an AFC championship game. But you're still even wondering if that would have been enough based on Terry Pegula's demeanor and clearly still reeling from the loss in Denver and wondering if there would have been a loss in New England similar to the one in Denver, if that would have been it for McDermott as well, because it wasn't taking the Bills to the Super Bowl. Now, Pegula opened the press conference by mentioning McDermott's 9 years of meritorious service. Didn't use the word admiral this time, but listen, he did say that this team has been left in a better spot due to McDermott, and then said this.
My decision to bring in a new coach was based on the results of our game in Denver. I want to take you in the locker room after that game. I looked around. First thing I noticed was our quarterback with his head down, crying. I looked at all the other players. I looked at their faces and our coaches. I walked over to Josh. He didn't even acknowledge I was there. First thing I said to him, I said, "That was a catch." We all know what I'm talking about. He didn't acknowledge me. He just sat there sobbing. He was listless. He had given everything he had to try to win that game. And looking around, so did all the other players on the team. I saw the pain in Josh's face at his presser, and I felt his pain. I know we can do better, and I know we will get better.
Now, obviously, emotions still running hot with the simultaneous catch. That really was an interception, as it was ruled on the field, that he still feels it's a catch. And I don't think anybody in Buffalo, New York, is ever going to be told or believed differently about going to the ground. It doesn't matter that Joe Burrow has come out and posted, like, that's as an obvious a call that they got right as possible. Like, no one wants to hear from anybody right now. And that, you know, for Terry to be that raw emotionally, is, you know, I always appreciate that. But you also need to get a little bit more here, because if he said the first things to Josh Allen was that was a catch, and Allen might be so inconsolable that he's not even recognizing the presence of the man who signs the checks, because he's so in his own head about his role in the loss. How does that have, any of that have to do with Sean McDermott?
Yeah.
Nothing. It's not McDermott's fault. He's the one who actually fought for Buffalo, stood up for Buffalo, right?
Yep.
How, like, this is all stuff that's out of McDermott's control. So it's clear it's more than just this. It's everything else.
I did not fire a coach based on a bad officiating decision. If I can take you into that locker room, I felt like we hit the proverbial playoff wall year after year. 13 seconds, missed field goals, the catch. So I just sensed in that locker room, like, where do we go from here with what we have? And that was the basis for my decision.
It's just everything. It's just, I'm sick and tired of not making the Super Bowl. Yep. So who's just going to hold responsible? He's going to hold the coach responsible. And that's the end of that. Yep. That's what it, you know, and so that then leads to the question about why are you elevating the general manager who has to have some role in this, in the general sense of putting it all on Josh Allen. He's got to wear the Superman cape in order to get the Bills as far as they get before the football gods seem to have a desire to keep kicking the Bills and their mafioso fans in the nards. With Brandon Bean sitting right there, he was asked about the roster and in Keon Coleman in particular. And this is the one soundbite that is clanking all over the place like it was said in Davos.
And a lot of people out there believe you have failed in the free agent market, and that obviously with the Keon Coleman signing, which hasn't worked out. How do you answer the fact that you have not given Josh a good enough wide receiver thus far?
Yeah, I mean, can I interrupt? I'll address the Keon situation. The coaching staff pushed to draft Keon. I'm not saying Brandon wouldn't have drafted him, but he wasn't his next choice. That was Brandon being a team player and taking advice of his coaching staff, who felt strongly about the player. And, you know, he's taken, for some reason, heat over it and not saying a word about it, but I'm here to tell you the true story.
Now,
wow.
Wow is appropriate. I understand what Terry Pegula was doing, is to jump in and defend the resume and decision-making of a guy who he trusts and really clearly loves in Brandon Bean. I understand he's like trying to own this on Brandon's behalf. Like, I'm sick and tired of hearing how Brandon's not doing the right thing, not giving Josh enough, not this, that, the other thing. It's a collaborative thing. The coaches have something to do with it as well. I understand what he's doing, but now that all that's done is denigrate a current player, denigrate a coach as he's going out the door, which you're trying not to do. And then now opening up to, hey, Brandon, how many of those picks are yours? Hey, how many are McDermott? And by the way, if Keon Coleman starts balling out next year, you can say the new coach was part of the reason to unlock him, but good thing McDermott stood his ground in that draft room and pounded the table for him. Like, it just opens so much up to questioning what is going on around there, you know? And if he's trying to cape for Brandon Bean, all the owner should know is, like, you elevating him shows that you've caped for him. You let him handle his own business and answer and keep everything else in house. You've opened a massive can of worms. And he interrupted again in another moment where Bean was asked if this was a power play, meaning, you know, hey, you have the owner's ear. And McDermott clearly didn't. And so there's a perception maybe in Western New York that Brandon Bean pulled a power play on the coach, and now he's still there. Coach isn't. Pegula hopped in the middle of Bean's answer again.
Can I help you about the power play part of that? I'm the kind of guy, if I sense you're on a power play, you're out. I don't like power play people. We have an organization that's, we work together, but any sense at all that he was on a power play, he would have been gone.
And
because that's not my kind of person.
And Joe, like, that's hurtful to even hear that or say that. Like, I worked 19 seasons starting as an intern in Carolina and worked my way up. I came here and I've never tried to do that. I would love for anyone who's making that accusation to walk in these doors and ask any person, player, coach, trainer, anyone. Like, people can disagree with draft picks that I make or people I sign or I screwed up the wide receivers, whatever it is. Like, those are harmful, harmful things that, you know, I walk in the door and my wife's got tears coming down her face for stuff like that. And I'm going to damn try hard to win a Super Bowl. Here I am. But for somebody to question my character like that, it is BS. And I've never done that.
I mean, this was a really intense press conference.
Man.
Jeez. It's really intense. And then the last one, again, roping Allen into all this, was he part of the firing? Was he consulted?
He didn't have any input at all. I didn't talk to Josh about this. I talked to him afterwards, and that conversation will stay private, but he had no input in it.
Pegula did say later that Allen will have a say on the new coach, which may be part and parcel of the news you're hearing today that we'll talk about with Mike Florio later on, that Brian Daboll has been requested to interview. Was the guy who was in his ear before the Giants took him with Joe Shane from the system in Western New York saying, come here. And Joe Shane is now in the same spot as Brandon Bean, where he's kept, other coaches gone, and everybody in the media is like, really? Fair or not, that's the world that everyone lives in there up there in Western New York. And everything I hear here about this, hard feelings, bitter feelings, you know, and tears from quarterbacks to clearly general manager and president of football operations spouses, that they got to get this next coaching hire right. Duh, obviously. But they got to get this one right. Because the previous guy left a mark, 9 years of success, just not enough success, obviously. And then a pissed off owner who's pissed off about the way he's running his business. You know, I don't know. Did anyone, this is probably too soon, but I'll go there anyway, Mike. I'm sorry. Hoskins, our Buffalo Bills mafioso, not liking power plays. Is that the hockey team too? I honestly, I don't know if there's people up there in Western New York that have just had enough and needing better. And obviously Pegula is somebody who wants to bring a cup and a Lombardi to that town. And they got to get this one right, because there's a lot of people there questioning decision-making now from above the coaching spot, because the guy who just got bounced, so many people think was a culture guy and has been there and done that and hasn't been sure the results getting over the hump. But the fact that he bears the entire brunt is unfair. And there's a lot of, again, emotions going on there. Getting the coaching right, where the fan base is all pulling in the same direction. I think at the end of the day, Bills Mafia will do so, because they love their team and there's a new stadium coming. There's going to be a lot of excitement and new excitement if they get this hire right and then get the drafts right. Because right now everybody's calling through the last draft choices of Brandon Bean, saying which one's yours and which one isn't. And why aren't the ones that are yours that didn't work out not receiving the same scrutiny as Keon Coleman is from the boss? I don't think I'm mincing any words here, am I?
Nope.
That's my takeaway from all this. You know, the Bills fans are all going to row in the same direction with the new coach and the new stadium and the same owner and now the new president of football operations. When it's all said and done, it's going to be a big crucial draft in Pittsburgh, just down the road. And if they get this coaching hire right, then everything we just talked about over the last 17, 18 minutes will be just like, okay, that was weird. Let's not do that again. And if not, it'll be like, how much weirder can it get around here? And there's at least one massive antidote of weird, and his name is Josh Allen. Because that guy's just flat out normal, which is what his reaction was after the game, a normal reaction.
Did you pick up the fact that he said he wasn't acknowledged more than once?
Here's how I would take that again, TJ, because I understand the way you're receiving it. It's like, I'm the owner. You need to acknowledge my presence here. Is that he was in such despair, the guy that is the beacon of hope for the town and the franchise and everything else. He's in such despair that he's not even recognizing what's happening. I've got to do something here. Coach is gone. That's how I'm taking that. But I understand how you might take it.
Now, my second question to you is this. I've always heard this from very successful businessmen, that you never make decisions based upon emotion. right there, it seemed to me, and maybe I'm off, that that was an emotional decision.
It feels like it, which is why he said, I wasn't doing it off of a bad call. I was doing it off of a missed kick, 13 seconds and over. It's just the results weren't there. But your responses are what I'm seeing quite a bit in my timeline.
Yeah.
They match a lot of what you just gave voice to. Kurt Warner next, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't you go anywhere. Who better to ask about Jarrett Stidham's readiness than Mr. Magic Carpet Ride himself?
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.
O'Reilly Auto Parts can help take the guesswork out of your check engine, ABS, or maintenance light with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE certified master technicians. O'Reilly Veriscan can identify the most likely problem with just one scan. If you need help, O'Reilly Auto Parts can recommend a shop for you. Don't ignore a check engine, ABS, or maintenance light. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today. A free service exclusively at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Rich Eisen here. The tax deadline will be here before you know it. And you just want to know your taxes are actually being handled. But the old way? You hand everything off and then silence. Days pass. Weeks pass. You start wondering, should I send another follow-up email? It feels like you're chasing updates and getting nowhere. But now, taxes are different because your taxes are done for you by a TurboTax full-service expert. With Intuit TurboTax, you can match with your dedicated tax expert and hand off everything right in the app. And while your expert checks for every deduction, you'll see real-time updates on your phone so you always know exactly where things stand. Suddenly, you're not refreshing your inbox. You're going for a run, grabbing a coffee, scrolling anything other than a just checking in message. Because your TurboTax expert is handling it and keeping you in the loop. So this tax season, get your best possible outcome and every dollar you deserve without the guesswork. Visit TurboTax.com today to learn more. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile app. Only available with TurboTax full service experts.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Hall of Famer Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. All right, in terms of Jarrett Stidham, Kurt Warner, we're going to rally around you right now and try and get an answer about how well you think he's going to play and what must be going through this young man's mind with an opportunity and a magic carpet ride, albeit just two games worth, sitting right there in front of him to jump on. Kurt?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, you want to reference back to my situation, and you hate the injury part of it and what it means for the individual and for your team from that perspective. You're excited about the opportunity as well to have the opportunity to get out there and showcase what you can do. I mean, for Jared, in this situation with a chance to punch your ticket and start in a Super Bowl, is pretty incredible. I don't know. I haven't seen anything like this before. But with all that being said, I think there is a great deal of pressure on him. You know, when I took over, there was, of course, a lot of pressure on me, but it was more personal pressure, than team and organizational pressure at that time. My pressure was, hey, you better perform well, or this may be the last opportunity you have to ever play. His pressure is, okay, we got all the way here. We lost our starter. This is a chance for the Super Bowl. You know, this whole team has worked to get to this point, have home field advantage, and now all eyes are going to be on him. And not that it's right or wrong, but if he doesn't come in and play well, that's, you know, going to be the major thing that people look at and go, this is why they didn't go to the Super Bowl. And not that it's his fault because he's a backup and hasn't played in a couple years, all of that, but that will be the narrative that we talk about. You know, if anything happens in this game or if he doesn't play great in this game, that's going to be the narrative. And so that is a whole nother level of pressure to deal with. And so, you know, it's a completely different situation from me. Although, you know, you understand that getting thrust in there and, you know, he's been there a couple years. And so he knows the offense, he knows the, you know, what they're asking him to do, you know, which is, again, when I took over, I felt very comfortable. I felt great in the offense. I felt like I could go in and perform at a high level. And the coaches weren't afraid to, you know, give me the opportunities to play. And so that to me is going to be the interesting part of this narrative. It's not just how he plays, but how does the team play? How does, you know, Coach Payton call this game for him? You know, he was up on the podium saying, I got great confidence in Jared and what he can do and just watch and just wait. But a lot of that will be shown by how does he come out in this game? You know, how did they play early? Does he give him opportunities to push the ball down the field or call plays that are, you know, that are supposed to push the ball down the field and make some of those plays early? Or does he manage this game like I've seen him do with Bo a number of times, and specifically early in Bo's tenure, where it's a lot of bubble screens and a lot of quick, you know, designed throws and completions early, allowing everybody else to kind of do the work as opposed to the quarterback and leaving it to the defense. So I'll be interested to see how that part of it plays out. But make no mistake, there is a lot of pressure here on Jared Stidham in this moment, just because of the magnitude of what it means for the other 52 in the locker room.
Yeah, it's a great point, Kurt, that, you know, you had the full season to get to the point, thankfully for you and your teammates, yep, to get to the NFC Championship game. And by the way, face the Buccaneers with all those, yeah, future Hall of Famers on the other side of the line of scrimmage. And he's just like, it's all supercharged. It's all just, yeah, the now. It's kind of like our current generation. I want it now. I want to go to the, yeah, Super Bowl now. Well, you actually have the chance. And I guess the other difference, too, is Sean Payton wasn't crying about losing Bo Nix like your coach was crying about losing Trent Green. Right, Kurt?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I know he was crying because he lost Trent. I don't know if he was also crying because I had to go in. Like, there was a whole bunch of things going on there. I don't ask the question on why exactly, yes, he was crying.
Did you ever ask him? Jerry asked Dick, were you crying about me?
I don't think I want to know the answer to that. You know, I think another interesting part, too, is, you know, there was a discussion. I can't remember what it was based off of earlier, if it was Shadur or something,
right,
just about when he got put in and how backups don't get a lot of reps. So even though he's been there for a couple years and knows the offense, I don't know how many reps he's gotten within the offense this year, especially bringing along a young second-year quarterback in Bo Nix. And so it's another part of it that, you know, you wonder is, yes, I know the plays on paper. How comfortable am I throwing those plays, you know, in terms of a game and with the guys that are going to be on the field?
Well, you know, Kurt, you and I have something to do with this as well, because Jared Stidham's four career starts came in two consecutive seasons for two different teams who benched their starting quarterbacks after losing a game that you and I called on Christmas Eve on NFL Network. Derek Carr being sent home. Jared Stidham gets a start. We called that game in Pittsburgh. Next, yeah, year, Russell Wilson sent home. Jared Stidham gets two starts. We called that game in Denver.
A bad, you know, announcer curse that we have. Or something.
I don't know. Nobody's, well, it didn't happen to anybody this year. Didn't happen to anybody this year.
Nobody's going to want us on these games. You know, Bill Belichick, the last win that he got.
That's right.
Like, I know. There's always something. I don't know how well that bodes for us moving forward.
But is there anything to glean from those four starts at all that we can look at? Hang your hat on? And do you want to answer the question about what you think Sean Payton's going to do?
I don't know what we can hang our hat on. I mean, you know, every situation is different. You know, I think anytime a guy has played and you know that he can play and make some plays in the league, that gives people confidence, whether it's the fan base or, you know, the guys in the locker room knowing what he's capable of. But I don't know if you can pull a whole lot from a couple years and go, okay, well, this is exactly what he's going to be. I'm not really sure. I think we're just going to have to see in the moment where he's at and how he's going to play in this kind of moment. Sean Payton, I do believe that we're going to see, knowing the defense that they have on the other side, I think we're going to see him very much manage the game early on. And I could be wrong. He might come out and go, New England thinks we're going to manage the game. We're going to take some shots early and try to surprise him. But I really believe, like, you know, especially after watching the game last week with the Texans against New England, is, you know, the one thing that you don't want is you don't want your quarterback to give this game away when you believe you have a championship defense. And so I believe looking at that, you know, along with the, you know, mindset probably going in anyways, is, hey, let's play this pretty close to the vest early and see where our defense is at, and let's see how this game progresses, and let's not do anything where we make it easier on the other team, and we got to play catch-up type mode. And so that, to me, I think, you know, as he's watching that tape, that'll be in the forefront of his mind is, okay, how do I do this so, you know, we can keep this thing close to the end, or we can take a few shots, but not do anything that may give this thing away or make it way harder on us than it needs to be.
So then what was the larger number as you're making your notes for QB Confidential and everything else that you do with NFL Network and us, Kurt, what was the larger number of you watching the film of Texans at Patriots? Was it the number of times you saw the Patriots defense make a play that Super Bowl quality that they can repeat against Denver, if not beyond, or the number of times you said about CJ Stroud, what is he doing? What was he seeing? What was the larger number of watching?
Definitely CJ Stroud. And, you know, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of that this year. You know, we talked about it a little bit in the game we did a couple weeks ago, just, you know, the pressure situations and just seeming to not really be aware of what's going on and what's around him. You know, I called the game on Monday night against the Steelers and broke it down on our show. Just how many times he made a bad play worse in that Pittsburgh game where flea flicker and all of a sudden there's bodies around him and he decides to try to throw a 50-yard pass with bodies around him and obviously he gets hit, or the interception on the naked bootleg this past week where there was a guy right in his, like, it was like he was oblivious to how close that guy was to him as he turned and tried to, you know, flip his hips and make a throw while the guy's hitting him and the ball goes up in the air and it becomes a pick six. And so those were the things that really left me shaking my head a lot with CJ this year, is just the times that he just didn't seem aware of certain things going on around him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, this one really dumbfounds me because you can't always pin it on something you're seeing, bad technique or whatever. And you know me, when he was a rookie, I thought he played like a top five quarterback in the league. Like, he was that good that I was so excited about, my gosh, this guy could be one of those really special guys after his rookie year. In the last 2 years, I feel like he's really regressed. And I can't really, you know, again, it's one of those, unless you sit down and talk to a guy, what did you see here? What were you thinking there? I can't really put my finger on it, but it's been frustrating to watch. I know he even mentioned he hasn't played his best football this year, but it's really trying to figure out why, what's going on, and what are you missing right now that we have to get back so we can get that special quarterback we saw when he was a rookie.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. Let's talk about the NFC Championship game. Fair to say best offense left in the playoffs against the best defense left in the playoffs. Kurt, is that fair?
Yeah. I don't think it's, okay.
What's it going to come down to? What do you think?
I think it's going to come down. I mean, there's just so many factors in these games that I love. And that's the beautiful thing when you get down to two games, so many things I could point to on this. What I think it's going to come down to is what Seattle does really well is they prevent the big play. The last time these two teams played, the Rams attacked the middle of the field over and over again and got big play after big play after big play. And I know they lost that game, but that was the reason they were up 14. And then, you know, they first possession in overtime hit a 40-yard touchdown pass to Puka. But attacking the middle of the field is going to be key. Seattle is going to get up and be physical with these receivers. And, you know, the great thing is you've got, you know, Puka, who's a physical receiver on that side. You got Devontae, who has the ability to avoid that physicality with his quickness. But that, to me, is going to be a matchup. There's going to be some contested plays in this game because that physicality on the Seattle end. And who wins those battles is going to be key. And then, as always, pressure. Whether it's pressure with the front four, can Seattle get pressure with four? You talked about the great Tampa team back in the day that I played against. That was their greatest strength. Pressure with four. And then being able to leave everybody else on the back end that you have to work around, or when they bring pressure. Because I did a breakdown this week on QB Confidential of the Rams, and I felt like their ability to answer pressure against Chicago won that game for them. There was a two or three hot situations where Matthew Stafford got the ball to his receiver quick. One was a tight end that led to a huge play that would be the last touchdown that they scored, and then one in overtime to Puka that was right about in the 50-yard line where Puka carried a couple guys but set them up for their winning field goal. And so Seattle will bring pressure at different times, and throughout the year it's been kind of 50-50 where, you know, the Rams have had success against it, and other times it's created negative plays. So where that goes when they do bring pressure, because they do a lot of different things, we'll bring it from a lot of different areas, will go a long way also in determining, you know, who goes on to Santa Clara.
Man, isn't that amazing? The winner of this game plays in the home of the 49ers for the right to win the Super Bowl. Crazy. And then, of course, you got Vrabel and the Patriots taking on Sean Payton. It's Mike versus Sean, Mike versus Sean, in both conference championship games. All right, so then what stands out at you to you said it was Rams versus who in our predictions on game?
Actually Rams versus New England. So I went with a couple-time rematch.
You'll stick with that?
Yeah, why not? I mean, why not? I mean, again, Seattle, I think, just watching them last week, I'm excited for this matchup. I mean, that game, they came out and dominated, physically dominated that game.
Yeah.
But the Rams, I felt, have outplayed them in both games they played this year. So that one's going to be awesome. And I could see either team winning right there. Of course, I'm going to give the advantage to New England on the other side.
Just because of the quarterback.
Just going in. I think they're very evenly matched. I don't think either one of these teams was a great team coming in. And so, yeah, I mean, going with a guy that had an MVP-type season, even though hasn't necessarily been great in the playoffs but has made some big plays, you just have to lean in that direction. And it's a bummer to say, but really because the backup quarterback is playing for Denver.
So, because again, we could find out in a couple of Thursdays, is in fact the MVP of the league, reigning MVP of the league, despite turning it over as many times as Josh Allen did, still put 30 up on the Denver defense. So anything that you saw there, did you think Drake May and the Patriots offense can exploit on any of the film that you watched for QB Confidential?
For sure. Like if you're able to protect up front, which is the whole key against this Denver team, they're aggressive on the back end. They do some things on the back end, but they allow a lot of big plays on the back end, and there were a lot of big play opportunities in that game for the Bills. Some were hit and some were missed in that game, you know, including the last one. You know, Josh had Brandon Cooks open. If he just throws it earlier and throws it further, they probably win that football game, and he may walk into the end zone. So there are some big plays to be had, especially against their man-to-man coverage, if you could protect up front. And New England's been very good at pushing the ball down the field and getting those big plays. And so that will be, again, a determining factor, really, I think, for both defenses, is that you want to force the offense to have to move the field and make the right play over and over again. And so you don't want to give up those big plays. But, yeah, there was a number of big play opportunities, and, that'll be a key in that matchup.
Obviously, if it's Rams-Patriots, get ready for, you know, obviously a lot of memory lane stuff, Kurt.
Yeah.
With you and
– Yeah.
What goes through your mind when you see this picture, you and young Tom Brady, Kurt?
That guy right there. Come on, man. No. obviously, I know that we kind of started the dynasty, of the Patriots in that game. I think the biggest thing that I think about in that game was just us not playing our best football, because obviously we had a chance to win our second in 3 years. And that's just the beauty of our sport is it's not a 7-game series, where I think we could have probably beat the Patriots the majority of times if we played them, in a 7-game series. You get one shot, you get 3 hours. And in those 3 hours, they outplayed us. Even though Tom wasn't great necessarily in the game, he was great in the moment, which is what really become what, Tom Brady is known for, is that last drive. We kind of thought we had taken the momentum. Okay, they'll play conservative, just go into overtime, and they went for it. And, Tom made some plays, and then Adam, kicking the game winner with no time on the clock, first Super Bowl ever decided in that moment. It was a great football game. But a lot of missed opportunities by us in that one. And that's, you know, when I think about that or I see that, that's what I think of. Yeah.
I think of two future Hall of Famers. That's what I think of.
Kurt. Oh, okay. Well, that's nice.
That's the way I feel it.
I'm sure that's not what they're going to be talking about. If those two teams make it and we show the replays of those games over.
I have a microphone too. I will talk you up. Nobody's asking the question of the Sports Illustrated cover behind you anymore. We all know who you are. Kurt, thanks again, buddy. I'll see you this weekend. Oh, actually, I won't. You're calling the AFC Championship game, right?
I'm actually calling the NFC Championship game.
Oh,
so I'm actually going to be in Seattle for that one.
All right.
I will obviously be on the show, so I'll talk to you. Just won't see you.
Okay. First. Early wake up for Kurt, even though he doesn't like to get to the stadium that early, but there's no I in Kurt or Warner. Thanks for the time, as always, bud. Be well.
All right, man.
That's Kurt Warner, everybody, right here. Everybody check out QB Confidential, his YouTube channel. Right here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH. Number to dial. Baker Mayfield has chimed in on a new head coach in his division. That's coming up.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
LinkedIn Jobs is stepping things up with their new AI assistant so you can feel confident you're finding top talent and hiring right the first time. Get this. Employees hired through LinkedIn are 30% more likely to stick around for at least a year compared to those hired through the leading competitor. So get started now by posting your job for free at LinkedIn.com/Eisen. That's LinkedIn.com/Eisen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So, as we all know, Kevin Stefanski is now the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons after many years in Cleveland, including two Coach of the Year seasons in Cleveland. And one of the deans of, sports journalism, certainly there in Atlanta, is D. Orlando Ledbetter. I believe you would probably know for sure, Chris, who he is, and certainly everybody who reads about Georgia athletics and certainly Falcons. Knows who he is, and he wrote a column and posted it talking about Stefanski's previous quarterbacks and referred to Baker Mayfield in such a way that Baker responded, and it's the first ever nonverbal, no soundbite edition of Let's Bake.
Fire the cannons!
We don't take any shit. About it.
Let's bake.
All right. Normally we play a Baker Mayfield soundbite, but short of that, here's his post in reposting D. Orlando Ledbetter saying that Stefanski had a dumpster fire at quarterback in Cleveland. Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson failed, which started a chain reaction to 11 other starters. Shedeur Sanders closed out last season with 7 starts. Baker retweeted that. Failed is quite the reach, pal. Still waiting on a text/call from him, meaning Stefanski, after I got shipped off like a piece of garbage. Can't wait to see you twice a year, coach. So D. Orlando Ledbetter's description of Baker has failed leads to cannons being fired in Stefanski's direction.
And won a playoff game with the Browns.
Well, right. While Stefanski was out with COVID,
yeah,
he was in his basement.
The one game that he won, 11-5, and that was one of Stefanski's two Coach of the Year seasons.
Here's what I know, Rich and Chris and Mike, about certain people. When you use pal,
exactly.
Like that,
yeah.
Bro,
exactly.
Hey, listen, pal. Oh, you know, you might as well use a 4-letter expletive.
Right.
That
for sure.
Yeah, when power, buddy. Oh man,
it's like that old Dane Cook joke of like, hey, good job, chief.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's very implied.
Yeah,
what the tone is.
Hey, pal.
Hey, pal.
Listen, I'm sure Baker, in a quiet moment, private moment, will explain to you he's learned some things about the type of quarterback that's needed and the type of quarterback he was in Cleveland off the field or maturity-wise or what have you.
For sure.
And Browns fans will talk about it, but just labeling him as failed is a rough label, to say the least, and I think somewhat unfair, if not completely unfair.
But
Stefanski never called or texted him after that either. That's
well, Joe Thomas something. Did come back and was like, hey, you know, communication is a two-way street.
No, I think Baker would admit this.
Yeah.
That I should never. I don't want to wind up. I don't want to wind up being one of Baker's pals, pal. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Don't tell me anything, pal.
But Bucks Falcons games, which are always rife, just got what rifer? Because Let's Bake is intending to bake against Kevin Stefanski.
I mean, for a quarterback, Baker was 29-30 with the Browns. For a Cleveland quarterback to have a virtual 500 record, that's impressive.
And don't forget what they were, how they were born into the first round, first overall selection to use to get him.
So,
right?
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.